This is Will's Band of the Week for October 16th, 2011. Hello and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett.
Hello.
And Barrett's from a remote... This is cool. You're like really in a remote location here. Why don't you tell us about it?
I'm in Dallas. Okay, I'm at this super... It's ridiculously swanky here. I'm here for work. And it's at this Four Seasons. Have you heard of the Byron Nelson Golf Classic?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm at this... In this villa on the 18th green.
You're, like, overlooking the green?
There's a water hazard. I could throw a baseball to it. I could actually throw a golf ball and get a hole in one if I took, like, 50 throw or 100 throws. It's ridiculous.
So during that tournament, your room would be, like, $2,500 a night, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'd have to wear a helmet if I was, out on the little deck.
is there special plexiglass on the windows?
There is a little glass here. Yeah. They kind of protect you. If you're sitting down, you're not going to get hit. If you're standing up, you're vulnerable. That would be a really, like a John Daly shot. You come flying this way.
Wow. Your employer just goes first class.
Well,
man,
yeah.
That's impressive.
I've got this. Oh, wait. Now I've got. Okay. I'm in Texas here, and there's like this weird. Some kind of a beetle in my room. I go get a paper towel, get rid of that.
Okay, you can give us the play-by-play while you kill that thing.
All right. It's kind of from the bathroom. It's kind of a long way from the bathroom back to where I was talking before. Let's see. Here he is. Sorry, little guy. Hey, you know, I can actually liberate this guy. Send him outside. That's the Will's Man of the Week way.
Wow, what a guy.
Save bugs and... there we go. Now he's down there. He's landed on the grass, and it's nice, soft, well cared for grass here.
You didn't use your natural human tendency to just crush the thing. That's pretty good. Showed some good restraint.
He's kind of nasty. He's kind of big. It's like the size of an M&M. I didn't really want to crush him.
Oh, wow. You don't want him in your room either.
Mm-mm.
Okay, so before we go further, let's tell the listeners they can contact this podcast by sending an email to willsband@yahoo.com, going to the webpage willsband.net, and you can post comments there, or you can go to the Twitter feed, or the Facebook page, or iTunes, all those things. See, I'm getting really fast at giving this information now, right?
Yeah.
And all you have to know is Will's Band of the Week, or, you know, if you're on Twitter, it's just at Will's Band, and if you're on Facebook, you just look it up and you find us. So, everything's good.
And, yep.
And this is our first podcast, I think, where anybody has been, like, not within the Madison city limits.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? So,
Chris over on the other side of Midvale,
which
is about 2.5 miles from your house. That's the previous record.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how far Dallas is from Madison.
It's got to be
probably like 800 miles or something.
That sounds about right. Yeah. You know, I've been to Dallas just one time, you know, when I was there.
For the Super Bowl?
Nope. For something more, for a different type of an athletic event. I ran the Dallas Marathon.
Oh, yeah. You did tell me that once.
In like, I think 1989.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it was two laps around White Rock Lake, which is somewhere near, you know, and they called it the Dallas White Rock Marathon. I'm pretty sure it was like, you know, 12 or 13 around that lake, so they did two laps.
That's cool.
But it was pretty good. It was a good marathon to do.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a flat area here, isn't it?
Yeah, it was very flat, and it was, I think, the first week of December, and, you know, it was the perfect running weather, like 55 and sunny. You know, just what you want. So, yeah, that's about all I know about Dallas. Got a good friend who grew up in the Dallas area. And you know what's really bad about that? It makes you a Dallas Cowboys fan.
Yeah.
That's, and so, you know, I can't blame him, but boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just think you'd be rooting for Jerry Jones all the time.
Yeah.
There's just people
Maybe you could cure something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Probably not.
I don't know.
I think it's too late, and especially if he's, you know, our age.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's too late for him.
He's sort of your age, like just a few years younger than me.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. So, but in spite of being from Dallas, a totally cool guy. So, you know, I'm gonna give him a pass on the Jerry Jones thing.
Yeah. Are there any bands from Dallas? The only one I can think of is, what is that band? They had like a whole bunch of people that wore robes.
Oh, that band. Yeah, I can picture
them. Yeah, the Polyphonic Spree.
Okay, they were from Dallas?
They're from Dallas.
I think bands that are from Dallas just move to Austin and say they're from Austin, probably.
Yeah, probably.
How far is it to...
Spoon's probably from Dallas. I don't have any idea.
I bet it's not that far. I think it's like 100 miles from Dallas to Austin.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong. Texas is a big state.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. What do we have? You know what? Last week when I sat here in Fourth Bedroom Studios all by my lonesome, I discussed the music news of Steve Jobs dying.
Mm-hmm.
And I left something out. You know, I mentioned that, you know, he, one of the things he did, of course, is I would credit him with inventing the iPod, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe, I'm sure he had like tech guys that actually sort of, you know, maybe the word invent would apply better to. But
yeah, but he's kind of driving the bus.
He was the vision, right, for the iPod?
Yeah.
And, but you know what else that Apple's responsible for is podcasts. I mean, right?
That's right.
I mean, there were podcasts, there were clumsy programs you could use to get podcasts, but when everything became available on iTunes, and that anybody could put a podcast up there, that was just revolutionary. You know, I don't think we'd be here today without Apple starting the whole podcasting thing through iTunes.
Yeah.
So there's another shout out to Steve Jobs.
Yep. Yeah. Well, what can you say about his effect on all kinds of industries? Not the least of which is the music industry.
Right. I know. And then he got into, I mean, I remember thinking at first, Apple's going to have a phone. That's kind of weird. You know,
right.
Just doesn't match your preconceived idea. You know, like, what would you think of a Microsoft telephone? You'd be like, what is that? You know?
Right.
But, but boy, you sure pulled it off, right?
Mm-hmm.
So pretty cool. So again, I thought it was worth mentioning Steve Jobs twice.
Yes.
And I didn't give him the death of the week jingle again, though. Now, somebody
just
else
out of,
died.
Out of respect?
Yeah, well, I thought, you know, we played it once, you know,
okay.
Last week.
Yeah.
But, you know, somebody did die. And you know what? I'm going to just decide that he's not worthy of playing the jingle. But the former bass player for Weezer died at age, like, 40.
He's not worthy?
No.
Why? Was he only, I mean, he was only with the band for a while.
He was some guy in Weezer for the first couple. Now, maybe Chris would tell us that this was like...
He was on the Green Album.
Maybe it was Weezer's prime. Yeah. I don't know. So...
Why don't you hum the death music? Compromise.
Well, you know what? I'm not really that hard to convince, so here we go.
And now it's time for...
R.I.P.
Yep.
Guy from Weezer.
Yep.
And
yeah, I guess he had drug problems. And
yeah, that's just kind of...
Why do people get mixed up in drugs?
I don't know.
Seriously.
Yep. They shouldn't.
No. Stay off the drugs. Stay in school, kids.
Yes. For some reason, people don't learn from the mistakes of others.
Right.
Happens with countries too. You know, not that we want to get political or anything.
But so, seriously, if you're in a rock band and you're, you know, hanging out behind the backstage and somebody's got some heroin or something, don't you just maybe pause and think, do I really want to go down this road?
You would think so,
or you just got a half a bottle of Jack Daniels in and you're going to do anything. You're just crazy.
Yeah.
You don't want to look like a wuss.
Right. Makes you wonder if that's how it happens. They're compromised already, you know.
Whenever Chris is at the studio, a fourth bedroom studio. He's always pressuring us to start doing drugs.
Yeah,
we've managed to resist.
Yeah, it was like bringing heroin in the house. You know, it's just
not
cool.
Pretty bad.
Yeah,
like with your kids there and stuff.
It's not good. Yeah, even the dog, I wouldn't want him to get it either.
Oh, no, not at all.
I mean, can you imagine? I mean, he'd start like stealing dog biscuits or something to try to sell off. You know. Yeah. Oh man! Yeah, so. And I think someone else died who was so obscure that I can't even remember who it was.
Yeah.
No other major deaths this week. And I had that other music news item.
Bug land on my foot.
Is another one?
This is really buggy here.
Is another one of those big beetle things?
The big bugs come big in Dallas, just like 10-gallon hats and big cars. They also have big bugs. Big, the big Texas toast. Everything is big.
Right. Everything is big.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I'm going to go close these sliding doors here. It's the inside. We're safe. All right.
Are you now in a safe environment?
Yep.
All right. Did you know that Queen's "We Are the Champions" has been found to be the catchiest song ever written, according to new scientific research?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
This was
how do they they've got to program in some kind of parameters and stuff.
It must be something like the data that they put into Pandora or something,
mm-hmm.
right? So this is from NME, the British rock and roll magazine, right? It says scientists at Goldsmiths University conducted new research into what makes a song memorable and compiled a list of the 10 catchiest songs of all time. In order to get the results, they observed thousands of volunteers singing a selected list of tracks. During the course of the research, they discovered that sing-along songs contained four key elements: long and detailed musical phrases, multiple pitch changes in a song's hook, male vocalists, and higher male voices making a noticeable vocal effort.
Wow.
Why would a male vocalist be more catchy than a female vocalist?
I don't know. That doesn't stand up to reason.
Very bizarre. Yeah. So anyway, it says the scientists found that "We Are the Champions" was the track most were able to sing along to. This was followed by YMCA by the Village People.
Yeah.
Some 41's "Fat Lip," which I don't know.
I don't know that either.
Europe's "The Final Countdown," which isn't that some old kind of bad progressive rock
it's
thing?
It's terrible.
Yeah. It's
These guys are not any scientists in the field that I recognize.
Yeah. And then a song called "Monster" by a band called The Automatic, which I've never heard of.
Huh.
But here's a quote from music psychologist. Now that is a field I should have gone into, music psychology. That sounds like fun.
It does sound like fun.
Music psychologist Dr. Daniel Mullensiefen said of the results, "Every musical hit is reliant on math, science, engineering, and technology, from the physics and frequencies of sound that determine pitch and harmony to the high-tech digital processors and synthesizers which can add effects to make a song more catchy." Well, that kind of goes without saying, really, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like an analytical way of saying what you can kind of figure out, like the Hall & Oates hit machine, like we used to always say, the formula, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, anyway, kind of interesting anyway. I mean, you can sort of see "We Are the Champions." That's like about as simple as it gets, right? As far as a melody. But I have to admit, when I first read the headline, I was actually thinking "We Will Rock You" instead of "We Are the Champions."
Yeah.
Right? Because that's like that's more like a sports cheer, I guess.
But it's not really very tuneful.
Right.
It's just kind of a chant.
Right.
"We Are the Champions" is like a joyous sing-along thing. I mean,
right.
I have a very specific memory of winning the little, B-League hockey championship in De Pere, Wisconsin, in about 1977, and going to the roller rink, and they played that song. We all had our little plastic trophies. I thought I was the coolest person in the world.
So these are your glory days now.
That was my glory days, yeah.
Wow, and they played We Are the Champions.
Yeah, and we were skating around.
And you felt like a champion.
I was like, I didn't even touch the skating floor.
Yeah, you were just floating.
My wheels were 5 feet off the ground. I was so excited.
So, yeah, there's a little testimonial.
So you've kind of validated the research there, I think.
Yeah.
Yep, Freddie Mercury. The guy knew how to write some songs, that's for sure.
Yeah, he did. I didn't know he was the songwriter. I didn't even know.
Oh yeah, that's all Freddie Mercury.
Okay.
Queen had an interesting kind of a division of songwriting where they would decide that they like each of them would get two or three songs on each album, and so. There would always be, you know, two or three, maybe Freddie Mercury got an extra one, so he might have gotten four, and usually his songs were the hits. Right. And then Brian May would get two or three, and his would be usually more hard rock, and they're usually pretty decent. And then John Deacon, the bass player, he was kind of erratic, but he wrote another one, Bites the Dust, which I thought was like one of the worst songs they ever did. But you know, it had a prominent bass line. So he's like, right, you know, whatever. And then there were always a couple songs by the drummer, Roger Taylor, that were just terrible.
Wow. You've got a deep knowledge of,
oh, I was
Queen.
A Queen no fan. Idea. Yeah. Back in the 70s.
I only knew Freddie Mercury and Brian May, but you're throwing all these other guys out there.
Yeah. Roger Taylor,
songs.
I saw something on Palladia or one of those music channels where they were talking to Roger Taylor, and you know, he's kind of a cool guy. He's an old classic rock guy, and you know, kind of liked the guy, but it's just his songs, just man, oh man, they were just not very good at all. They were not anywhere near the level of a band of that caliber, you know.
Right.
So, all right, do you got any other music news?
No, I don't think I do. I do not.
Okay, and we promised we'd talk about Wilco, and we're going to deliver. We're going to deliver. So Wilco, what are they up to now? You must know how many studio albums they have now.
I just don't. I mean, I could go through it and think.
Must be about eight or so, right? Eight or nine.
I mean, there's AM being there. Summer Teeth, Foxtrot, Ghost is Born, Sky Blue Sky, Wilco the album, and this is eight.
So I was.
Did I miss one?
I don't know. I think I was pretty much right on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this new one.
About 15 years.
Yeah. They take their time.
Slow. Yeah.
This one's called The Whole Love. And it's a pretty good album, isn't it?
It is good.
I mean, I don't think these guys really put out bad stuff, really. I mean, you get some controversial where some people want them to go more experimental and some people want them to go more kind of roots rock. And
right.
They usually do some of each. And I guess I still think that Yankee Hotel Foxtrot was like the best they got. But I think they've been pretty consistent. And, you know, what do you think about, before we start playing it, I remember we did kind of a long podcast about Wilco, right? About a year ago or a year and a half ago, maybe when
2 years ago, that was my first one I ever did.
Oh, was it really? Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That was your glory days too, probably, right?
Everything that's, yeah. If you're trying to say that my best days are behind me.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm not going to argue that. I might not have pointed that out on the podcast.
I mean, you might not ever reach the heights of the insightful comments you made about Wilco 2 years ago.
No, actually, I remember because it was my first one. I was pretty nervous about it. I had done a top 10 thing with Chris.
Oh yeah,
year before, or you know, like 9 months before. And doing this, I was just terrified. And I took I listened to every song, took notes about the instrumentation and the everything.
You thought we were going to really be serious.
Notes and notes. What's that?
That was when you were aspiring to NPR level, and then we just kind of settled back into just being us, right?
Which I think is, I think that's why, you know, we've been able to keep doing it because, you know, if you had to, you know, really spend a ton of time, you know, dissecting each song and having something intelligent to say about each single song and, you know, putting the album in the scope of music of the day and the band's career. I mean, it would just be overwhelmingly difficult.
Yeah, it would take the
plus,
fun out
I think,
of it.
Just what people like about it, the way that we do it, if they do, I think they do, some of them do, is that we are just kind of conversational and we're not trying to, you know, pass ourselves off as rock critics. We're just dudes.
Yeah, that's it. But have you ever seen, every once in a while, there'll be some album comes out and some fan on his blog will just analyze every song, and there'll be like track by track analysis.
Right.
And I always think, you know, it's kind of overkill. You know,
it is.
You could say what you like about an album, what you don't like about an album, but you know, to have to go through like painstakingly through tracks 1 through 10, one at a time, with a, you know, paragraph analysis of each.
Right.
That's probably, I think it's a fun exercise for somebody who's just an absolute super fan, right? And they're just like going nuts as they listen to it. They just, you know, are like totally immersed. So it's fun for them, but maybe not.
When's
the
last
readers.
Time you were a fan of a band as hard as that?
Where you would just analyze every song like that? Like you could theoretically
like you just
do that?
Out of your mind. Like you listened to it all the time and no one came out and you couldn't sleep and you were just insane. I mean,
you know, maybe when
it's been forever.
Yeah, maybe when I was like 21 or something.
Yeah.
But I mean, now it's more, I like listening to so much different music that I don't like.
Right.
Like I haven't listened to anything like 85 times like Chris listened to the Y Oak album. Like I probably don't listen to anything more than like between 10 and 15 times, like except on a really, really rare occasion, because I always want to go find other stuff to listen to. So, so I don't think that's bad. You know, I mean, I could have I'll probably have something on my top 10 list this year that I've probably listened to like maybe 6 or 7 times through, but I'll still be able to say that it was one of my favorite things of the year because it's because I've listened to so many different things.
Right.
You know, so
I kind of admire Chris's devotion to that.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It
I want to find something that I like that much.
I know. I mean, it's pretty cool when you can just be, like, dive into that level, you know?
Yeah.
So, of course, you know, Chris was multitasking when he had that album on, too, right? He was, he was being inspired to write his essays that he writes as he was listening to Y Oak.
And then, maybe a few times he puts it on repeat and then he'll leave it on.
Right.
Go home and come back in the morning.
Right. Just
and it played 12 times.
So that play count goes up. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I think so. He's trying to make his stats look
Chris.
Good. Yeah. That 93 times is really only like 72 because he cheated a little bit.
Yeah.
Or maybe his son like took his iPod and played it a few times too.
Right.
You know, like I got, well, you know, now, of course, now you listen on Spotify, it doesn't keep track. So, you know.
Right.
You don't know as much how many times you've listened to something, but like there are albums or songs that my kids like, and I'll iTunes will say, you know, it's been played like 47 times. Like, wow, somebody in our family really likes this song.
What is the album like if from your birth until now it kept track that you've listened to the most? What do you think?
That's a fascinating. You know what? The most fascinating thing about that question is that there is an answer to it. You know what I mean? Like, in theoretical, there is something that I've listened to the most ever, right? And there's a song that I've listened to the most ever, and I don't have the slightest idea what it is. You know, like, I remember as a teenager listening to, like, the Aerosmith Rocks album. I listened to that album a lot. And probably some of those old Kiss albums, you know, like maybe when I was 15 or 16, you know, there are probably a lot more repetitions, right? So maybe it would be biased toward stuff from my youth.
You know? That's true.
But I don't know. I mean, that early REM stuff, but I listen to that a lot, you know?
Yeah.
So, hard to say. Very interesting.
That is tough.
Yeah. So, why don't we start playing some Wilco music? What, do you have a track you think we should start with?
I wrote some down here. I like the second song a lot. It's called I Might.
That was kind of the pre-release single, right?
I don't know.
To the extent there's such thing as a single anymore.
But right.
This, I think, was the first one they made available. And I think one thing that distinguishes it is the distorted bass. I mean, they put all this fuzz on the bass. So for you bass listeners, listen to it. So this is called I Might.
Yeah, you know, that one I think would be, if I, looking at my list here, I kind of picked all ones that would sound at home on Summer Teeth, because that's my favorite.
So you think, don't you think this album kind of just sort of draws from all over the place?
Yeah.
From their repertoire?
Yeah.
Like I was saying before, they didn't really go all experimental or all, I called it roots rock, you know, whatever you want to call it. So there's a pretty good variety on the album. And, you know, we haven't mentioned yet, we went to see them last week, a live performance of Wilco. And I was, you know, it was kind of funny. You know what my wife's comment was? She's like, damn, there's all these people from the neighborhood that I know here. She's like, and she was like disappointed that she was like of contemporary age of a lot of the people rather than like going to shows where everybody else is younger, so you feel kind of cool because you're, you know, you're with the young people.
Yeah,
and
that was
here
not
were like
there.
These neighbors of ours, you know. And I said, "Hey, deal with it. We're the Wilco demographic, you know."
Right.
But yeah. I think, you know, I think they probably got a pretty good age range, right? I don't know. Are they considered uncool by 20 somethings? I don't know.
No, I mean, it sort of kind of doesn't matter. I mean,
yeah, that's kind of what
I. You know what? I mean, when I was 22 or whatever, I thought a band like Fleetwood Mac would be the worst.
Yeah.
But they're awesome, you know?
Yeah.
And I think anybody that's 22, 25 right now that thinks Wilco is lame, when they get to be our age, they're going to be like, wow, okay, these guys are...
They'll realize that, that they're legit. Yeah, and they're really...
I mean, they're as big an American band as there's been over the last 15 years. Who else is up there? I mean, they're the best American band of the past decade and a half.
That could be. They have to be right up there. You know, Jeff Tweedy,
rivals.
Jeff Tweedy is a pretty good stage persona.
Yeah.
And a guy too, don't you think? He's really good. He's got the easygoing, crack a lot of jokes and stuff. And he was right on with his comment about the Brewers. It was very funny because you and I were like periodically checking the Brewer score,
right?
and then
during every song,
and then he gets in between songs and he says, "I think you guys are distracted by the Brewers." And I was just like, "Yeah, I guess we were a little distracted, you know."
We were,
but
then the whole crowd started chanting, "Go Brewers, go!"
Right, that's right. Yep. Yeah, that was good.
And he kind of said that he regretted it, but I don't think he actually did.
Yeah.
Thought it was funny.
Yeah, I agree. So, I guess it's my pick. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pick the 12-minute song. I think, you know, maybe we'll play it about 3 minutes. But, you know, it's kind of a storytelling thing, right? It actually works pretty well. It's called One Sunday Morning. And what I'll be interested in is, I thought this was a good song live. And what I wonder is, two or three albums from now, in 6 years when they tour, will this still make the set list?
Yeah.
Interesting, because remember his comment? He actually made a funny comment about this. Like, he said that, you know, some of these songs, like, right now is your time to hear this, because you're not going to hear it the next time.
Yeah.
Because this is on the album now, and we're going to play this song tonight, but you better enjoy it now.
Right. And his point was, like, the people hear it now, and they're like, I don't know that one.
Right, they're not that
But in thrilled. 5 years, they're going to be like, why don't I ever play that one?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So here we go, track 12 called One Sunday Morning.
This is how I tell it. outside I look lived in, like the moons in a shrine. How am I forgiven? Oh,
that was the first 3 minutes and 20 seconds of a 12-minute song.
Yeah,
but it sort of works, right?
Yeah.
And I read a little bit about this, an interview. Actually, maybe it was the NPR interview. I hate to credit NPR, but he was talking about how this, basically the song is about a conversation he had with a almost complete stranger who started telling him like intimate details of his life. And he thought it was fascinating. And the guy apparently had dated Jane Smiley, who's an author, and so the song title in parentheses has "Song for Jane Smiley's Boyfriend." It's part of the title.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have known any of that.
Yeah, kind of cool, right? Little anecdote.
Thanks for the background on that one.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you. I forgot to ask you before. So I remember when we had that monumental podcast 2 years ago, and you were saying that. At least at first, you were not so sure about the whole Nels Klein influence on Wilco.
Right.
So, like, how are you thinking about it now?
Well, I mean, he's been in the band for such a long time now. Is this the sound of the ice? Is that really loud?
Yeah, it's like there's ice. Yeah, but it's kind of like it adds an authenticity here, you know? Because we don't really. That was my squeaking door just made a sound too. Hear that?
Wow. Yeah, these are the sounds of our lives that are going into the podcast.
Again, that's another thing, on NPR, they would never let those sounds get in, and we let them in.
They probably also never let people that are having a whiskey get on the radio either.
Yeah, that's true. Did you get one of those whiskeys out of the like the refrigerator in your room?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, when I come there, you know, we get the amount that you pour, about $20 worth. these are little $9.
It's $9 for a little tiny thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah. 50 milliliters.
I always treat the guests here in Fourth Bedroom Studios really well, don't I?
Yeah. Yeah, you do. Yeah. Definitely.
All right. So do you think, are we boring people by just talking about the Wilco album for so long? I mean, does everybody know about Wilco already? And are they thinking right now, come on, people?
Probably wondering what we think. Maybe they're not anymore. But when they started listening, maybe they were wondering.
Yeah. Well, why don't we play some more?
All right. If I have a song to pick, I'm going to pick the last song on side two of the four discs called Born Alone. Yeah, I referenced it that way because I went out and bought the actual record.
And that was your surprise, right?
That was my surprise. I
haven't seen it. Yeah, now since you're in Dallas, I don't have that
thing. You don't get
thing.
To see it.
You bought the LP.
It's cool. It's like a big, you know, it's like there's the artwork and it's huge, of course, because it's a record.
Yeah.
And it's a gatefold. And on the inside, where you want to have the lyrics and stuff and some information about who played the instruments and all that, there's just this like abstract art, and I don't know, that's kind of disappointing. You have to take out the there's like a little lyric sheet, you know, but
so they had a lyric sheet,
yeah,
but they just didn't have it printed as fancy as all the art,
right? It's just in there, like as a like folded piece of paper.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And, you know, but it's two discs, three songs on each side.
And we're talking LP discs here. We're not talking compact discs. We're talking black slabs. Yeah.
Big vinyl. And, it's fun to listen to it like that because it's kind of it's like an active thing. Like you sit down and you play side one or side A, however they label it, I'm not sure. And, you know, then you get up and, you know, I've determined that side two is my favorite, you know, 4, 5, and 6 is, you know, I don't think they sequenced this album, like thinking of the vinyl, but bands certainly used to do that with a side A and a side B.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And that's all lost on, you know, CD.
Yeah. Well, they're still sequencing and they're still sequencing, but it's first to last.
Stuff that was put on LP, you know, 20 years ago and more. You know, around the 6th song, which is the first song on side B, you've got a great song, you know.
Right.
And
almost
when
always
you listen
was,
to a
yeah.
CD, you just start at the beginning all the time. You know, you don't open it up and think, oh, should I play side one or side two?
Right. Have you ever picked up a CD or a, you know, an MP3 album and said, I think I'll start with track 6 and listen to the second half?
Yeah, like, no, unless I'm driving in my car.
Yeah. I only do that sometimes I make a mental note of, like, if I've gotten into it by 5 songs or whatever, that I'm going to pick it up where I left off. But, yeah, mm-hmm. It's kind of a rare occasion. Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, let's play track 6, Born Alone. Yeah, that's solid.
Yep.
You know what's interesting, and maybe I say this a lot about a lot of music, but I think Wilco really is a good example where sometimes you can hear a song for the first time. It just sounds like kind of a ho-hum average song. But then when you give it a little more time, it sort of reveals these layers, and it takes on a different dimension, sort of.
Yeah. And that song would be an example of that.
Yeah.
For you, huh?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like there's that little solo part that is a Nels Klein part in the middle there, where, you know, first you're thinking like they got this crazy rock guitarist and there's this real simple song, but a lot of the songs he's just got a little tiny part there and it's kind of subtle, but it adds a little dimension. So I should mention that my son kind of has a little bit of a thing where he kind of likes Wilco, mainly because of Nels Klein, because you know, he's the guy with all the pedals, and he must have played, what, like 8 different guitars or something. You know, almost every song he was pulling out a different guitar. So I mean, he's clearly like just totally into it. And you know, I mentioned this before when we saw them before, but you know, I think it's really cool to have sort of a guitar hero in his 50s, you know.
Right.
And not he's not like living his glory days, you know, he's like contemporary.
Right.
You know.
The only thing I know that he's done before is the Geraldine Fibbers.
I heard that name.
He sort of came to Wilco and everybody's like, here's this famous guitar, but I didn't really know anything about him.
Yeah, I had heard the name before.
Yeah.
But didn't know really much about it.
I don't think he can write. That's like his deal.
Yeah, that could be.
I don't think he's ever written anything of note.
But he's probably writing, in a sense, you know, his solos, right? I mean, he's playing within the framework of some song that Jeff Tweedy wrote.
And, right.
You know, I was thinking there's a comparison between these guys and The National.
Uh-huh.
And what I think is I see them both as these bands that really take a lot of time to write their songs and record them, and they're kind of meticulous, and they're all like every member of the band is an accomplished musician. Mm-hmm. And you know, bands like that are cool, you know.
Yeah,
because they're when they put on an album, it's not just like, let's just go record some songs and put them out. They're like really like studying, this is how we want it to be, you know. So as simple as it may sound when it comes out, they put a lot of thought into it.
Right.
So that's pretty cool.
It is cool. I think they get to be a band like Wilco and increasingly like The National. They're going to have a lot of pressure in their next few albums. But and then, you know, I think Wilco and Radiohead are two where, I mean, you have to be really, really careful when you put an album out. I mean, it's got to be you've got to think of your career arc and think of what you're going to do here next and what people are going to say and what people expect. And to what extent you want to, you know, confound people's expectations. And it's not just like putting out a Green Day album that's going to sound the same as the other ones. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like it's kind of a way bigger deal.
And they've got you could almost imagine like business meetings where they're trying to decide like what direction do they go, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of cynical and sad, but I mean,
right.
They're going to get raked over the coals almost no matter what they do.
Because they could, they'd be capable of, if they wanted to, just putting out a real simple folk rock album. And they'd also be capable of putting out kind of just a crazy, like that last Sufjan Stevens album, you know, with just like all kinds of just nutty stuff all over the place. They could do that if they wanted to.
Right.
You know, so they've got to find that. I guess that's probably what they try to do. They try to find a balance where they kind of showcase their talents, but they kind of, you know, keep the fans happy. Yeah, so I'm going to go back and do the predictable and play the first track. Because I think, don't you think the first track is kind of a cool way to start the album? Because it's 7 minutes and it's kind of experimental in the way that some of the earlier, like Yankee Hotel Foxtrot stuff is, I think.
Yeah.
And kind of cool.
Definitely.
So let's play that. It's called Art of Almost. We'll be right back. So that kind of, a little later, it launches into a big rock and roll jam, sort of.
Yeah.
So, cool song. Yeah. I think that song really sort of highlights what's good about Wilco, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool that they put that on there. But again, you know, I think we've shown that there's a variety there, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's good. I didn't spend any time thinking about where I'd rank this among the eight.
When they get up to 15, we can do a podcast like the REM one. When they get up to 15 albums,
we're not going
to
be alive.
We'll rank them.
We'll
be like, we'll be like 73 years
old. That's like 15 years from now.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
We'll be alive, but we probably, maybe we won't be doing the podcast. I don't know. I'm not trying to be pessimistic or anything, but
yeah,
it's a long way off.
You know, isn't it interesting how, you know, when we were young, there wasn't really such thing as old rock and rollers, right? Because rock and roll hadn't been around long enough.
Right.
But now you've got, you do have people who just keep, who, you know, are definitely rock and roll people and who just keep playing until they die.
Right.
And so you've got people like Neil Young, who's got to be, what, late 60s maybe? Is he 70
yeah.
yet, maybe?
All the guys in the, the Stones, Beatles, Who, all those bands from the early to mid 60s, they were all born in like 1942. They're all my dad's age.
Yeah.
You know, so they're all like 70.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know, when I was my son's 10, when I was his age, Paul McCartney was like 35 years old.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Paul McCartney just got married.
I heard that.
I don't know how old she is, but she's got to be like 30 or something, right?
No, you know what? She was like 51.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not quite so bad, I guess.
He's a grave robber.
Yeah.
Not a cradle robber.
Well, how old is he? 68, maybe? I'm going to say 68.
Probably 68 or 69. I think he was born in 42.
Okay. So I guess we can give him a pass. If she's over 50, that's at least respectable. You know, I was thinking, you know, like she'd be like 27 or something.
Yeah, that's gross.
Yeah.
As long as somebody's within, you know, a couple decades, it's not obscene.
Right.
At all, you know, but yeah, I mean, if like those, like with Hugh Hefner and stuff.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
He's like 80. I was like, "Who's my girlfriend? She's 25. She's not my girlfriend because I have $1 million. She's my girlfriend because she loves me."
Exactly.
How could you even live with yourself? Don't you be embarrassed? How could you look at the woman like, and you know, she's like, "I love you," and you look at her like, "You're freaking lying." There's no way you do.
Yeah, I think you're.
They'll be embarrassing.
He's
as
lying
well,
to himself.
You just lie to yourself.
Yep. All right. Have we sufficiently covered the Wilco album? I think we have.
Yeah. I bet Jeff Tweedy's got like a 20-year-old. Well, no, he's married.
I think he got divorced though, right?
No, he did?
I thought he got divorced like a few years ago, but I don't know. I haven't followed it closely enough. He's got some kids, right? He's got two or three kids, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one thing about these bands like Wilco. I think a lot of them have families.
Right.
And then they, you know, they say, "Oh, sorry, I got to go on tour for 6 months," and they're all over the world. I mean, they're doing a Europe tour and you know everything.
Yeah,
you know, which has got to be like really fun. But they probably have to like be away from their families for a long time.
And it would be fun. I think it would be a drag.
Well, I think if you had a family, it'd be pretty hard. Because, I mean, just from the limited travel I've done, and you know, you've done some too. But just like when you go travel, when you have a family, you can't enjoy it quite as much because it's not just all about you anymore, you know?
Right.
If you're single, you're just seeing all this cool stuff. It'd be just fantastic.
Right.
But if you're away from your family, I think it'd be hard. So they probably, I would guess, you know, the family meets them at certain points on the tour. So they, you know, can at least have some involvement. I would imagine, right? I mean, they probably make enough money that they can afford to do that. I don't know. What do you think?
You know, Linda McCartney, they never spent a night apart. She was with him on every tour.
Wow.
You know? Yeah.
That's kind of cool. I mean, that
is cool.
What do you think? How much money do you think the bass player and the drummer for Wilco make?
I don't know.
Isn't that an interesting question? I mean, I think, you know, Tweety, you know, he's got all the songwriting credits and he's clearly, right, you know, the main guy of the band. I mean, he probably controls it, right? So he probably, he's probably wealthy, I would think, right?
I don't know how wealthy. I have no idea. I know you
wealthy of like several,
like on the northwest side in Chicago.
I'm going to say he makes like several hundred thousand a year. But you know, I don't know. But I'm just guessing here.
Maybe. But yeah, you I don't know. I think that's, it's not higher than that. That's for sure.
Now, if you're the drummer or the bass player or the keyboard guy for Wilco, like, are you making?
You make like $19 an hour.
Yeah. Tweety tells you you're lucky. If you're lucky for what you've got, you get to play in front of these big audiences. So you, I'll bump you up to $21 an hour for this tour. Yeah. I don't know. That's interesting. Yeah, but you know they're it's their career. So right, you know, hopefully they're doing.
Oh, I'm sure
well,
they're doing okay.
Yeah,
I'd switch places with them. I'd do it for a quarter what they're making.
Yeah,
no matter what it is.
I was in a band with a doctor, and he said, you know, if I could make anywhere near the same amount of money, I would just quit medicine entirely and play music, you know?
Right. Well, yeah.
I mean, so yeah, people, sure. I mean, it's pretty cool to be able to do music as your career.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that as a person who could never do it, you know? I get paid, I've gotten paid like $50 though. So I'm a That's professional musician. Because
right,
I've actually been paid $50 to play music. Isn't that impressive?
That's cool. By definition, you're a professional.
That's what I was thinking. It's pretty funny. Yeah. So let's actually live up to the name of the podcast this week.
Will's
Band of the Week. We just had
singular.
One
singular. Yeah.
Right. So there's a lot of music out there, though, and I'm going to send you some on Spotify in the next week. We've got all kinds of fun stuff.
You know, I've got something for you to listen to on Spotify.
Good.
You know, the band Suicide?
I remember the name.
I've always just known the name, Alan Bega and Suicide.
Oh, yeah.
And I got it today, and it's unbelievably great. It is so exciting.
Wow.
Yeah. So listen to that, everybody, on Spotify. Or better yet, go out to your local record retailer and buy it.
You could get it on vinyl, probably.
Yeah, get it on vinyl.
You know, if I bought a vinyl album, I'd be looking at this thing. I'd be like, this thing is huge. Like, yeah. I'm trying to picture it right now. It's unbelievable.
It's fun.
How big it is.
Do it.
You know, I might
go get a record player. It's like, it's like active music listening.
Yeah,
it's
so pretty
much more fun.
I'm actually thinking about
getting into Bruce Springsteen lately, like old Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
So I've got, you know, Darkness on the Edge of Town and The River, and I'm only learning them. I'm only knowing about them from listening to the records. It's like, when's the last time that happened? Like,
you know,
forever ago.
I think that at least part of the discussion about you finding this turntable got lost on that podcast that got deleted. But you were saying that you were at a garage sale, right? And you found an old turntable.
Oh, it was on the Monroe Street Days thing where Grant was playing in his band, yeah.
And you found an old turntable, and you bought the turntable, and then you ended up buying the Wilco album on vinyl,
yeah.
And you played it on that turntable, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, are you thinking about getting anything else on vinyl?
Well, it's expensive.
Yeah. What is it? Is it $15?
I mean, this was $25, but it came with, it was a double album with the CD in there too.
Okay.
So that was unusually expensive, but usually it's going to be like, I think it's like several dollars more than a CD.
So it'd be like $15.
Yeah, maybe. Or even like $17-$18. And
the production,
you know,
costs
really gotta
are
want
higher.
Something bad. But you can go into the basement there at Strictly Discs, and they've always got a beer tapper going. You can just go in there and drink free beer and look at their records.
You were telling me that before.
It's a great thing. You can like,
yeah.
You know, all the records are like $5 or whatever. And, you know, get some old records and stuff and drink a couple of pops and go home and, you know, listen to some music.
I don't, right? You know, I've got to look and see if I still have that old turntable. I had a turntable, but now, honestly, I can't tell you right now whether I have a turntable.
Hmm.
I'm kind of thinking I probably don't have it anymore, but I'll have to go down to the basement and look.
Yeah.
So, because it is like, kind of intriguing.
I think your sons would like it too.
Yeah, it's the idea like, of just hooking it up and putting on a record is kind of a cool concept. We might have to do it. Yeah,
Grant especially, I think, would like it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just kind of old school, and you can listen to these old things that maybe you wouldn't get on MP3, but you can take a chance for a few bucks.
Yeah. Hmm. All right. We're going to leave the listeners with that thought.
Yep. Go little, get record players, everybody.
Little introspection. Everybody think about that for this for this week. So I think we're going to be back next week with more good music, aren't we?
Yep.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm starting to accumulate a list because got a couple new things today. Got a few things on Spotify, and we're not going to run out.
Yeah.
We never do.
Never any worry about that.
Right. So, well, thanks for participating from beautiful Dallas, Texas.
That was fun. Yeah.
And this is cool. We're gonna try to utilize this more. It's like the technology just keeps getting better. We can bring
this. I'm
curious
to hear it because I don't know what it's going to sound like.
But. You know, it sounds just as good as like when you were on Skype from your house.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the beauty of the internet.
Yeah.
So, very good. Okay, I think it's time to say goodnight, and you probably have like work to do, like because you're in Dallas for a legitimate reason. You got to do something for work, right?
This is my other job. I'm like I'm one of the preeminent swimming pool journalists in North America.
You could be the top.
There aren't many.
You might be the top swimming pool journalist in the entire continent.
We've got some pretty good ones. We've got some pretty good ones at the competition, and but I'm up there. I mean, there's a really small universe. You know, there are probably 10 of us. So I think I'm in the upper half.
You got to
prestige-wise.
You got to have a specialty in
these courses and write some story about building swimming pools. So
very cool. If the listeners need to know anything about swimming pools,
I'm the guy. Yeah.
You know, you've got a resource right here.
Safety first. I'll just throw that out there, and then. You know, there's other things to say about it too, but that's number one.
I bet drownings are really bad for the industry.
They are.
They're just not good.
Yeah. I mean, you
can't have that happening.
Get your kids swimming lessons. Also, if you're an adult, if you don't know how to swim, I don't mean just like, you know, keep yourself alive, but swim, you know, 100 meters or something. Go take some lessons.
I'm probably
because
marginal.
Your kids, the kids that you're watching are not safe if you're not a good swimmer yourself. So, there, I'll get off my soapbox.
That's valuable advice.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, and you know what we're charging for that advice?
Nothing.
Zero.
Yeah.
What a deal. All right. Well, thanks again. And let's sign off. We'll talk to you again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
All right. Good night.